This is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg. U.S. hands off Venezuela. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro called Brazilian President Bolsonaro a modern-day Hitler. Days after Brasilia officially recognized Juan Guaido, the head of Venezuela's opposition-run Congress, as legitimate president of Venezuela. Bolsonaro, a fervent anti-communist who has praised his country's 1964 to 85 military dictatorship, has promised to target Venezuela. To discuss democracy at risk in Latin America and the far right moving in is Maria Luisa Mendonca, director of the Network for Social Justice and Human Rights in Brazil, Kevin Zeese, a lawyer and political activist who currently serves as co-director of Popular Resistance, and Roger Wareham, secretary general of the International Association Against Torture and member of the December 12th Movement.
Thank you.
Maria Luisa Mendonca, let's begin by talking about the death toll from a Brazilian dam collapse at an iron mine, which has risen to over 100, with hundreds still missing. Indeed, the mining town of Brumadinho, which was nearly buried by the deluge.
We have now an openly fascist government of Bolsonaro. One of the first things he did was to say that he was not going to do any more environmental regulations in Brazil, and that he wanted to actually abolish the Ministry of Environment. What we see now is the consequences of not having strong environmental regulations. It's a huge tragedy in Brazil. Hundreds of people are missing and dozens were killed by this mining company, Vale, that was privatized in the 90s. And as a private company, that is very little regulation. This is the second huge disaster in 2015. Another dam also caused a huge disaster. It killed a whole river, and a very large region was destroyed, and 19 people were killed. We are in the situation in Brazil where we have seen a very strong repression now against social movements in the countryside, against indigenous people. We have threats also of repression in urban areas. One point about turning to attacks on Venezuela, the attacks on Venezuela by Bolsonaro and also by Trump, is also a way to have people distracted from the problems we have. Trump is facing a lot of trouble here in the U.S. and in Brazil. Bolsonaro is facing accusations, especially his son is facing accusations of connections with the militia groups accused of killing state representative Marielle Franco last year, who was assassinated. So we have accusations of corruption. We have many bad news coming out of Brazil, and turning the attacks on Venezuela is a way to get people distracted from the real problems that right-wing governments are facing.
What do you think the relationship of Trump and Bolsonaro means to what had been a movement in the last 10 years towards a leftward trend and a democratization of Latin America? And now, where do you see this going, and how important is it really to Latin America that you have somebody like Bolsonaro in power and have a firm tie and relationship to the Trump administration?
For over a decade, we had governments in Latin America that created a much more independent foreign policy in relation to the U.S. Now, with Trump and with several countries in Latin America being controlled by right-wing forces, you know, Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, Paraguay, Honduras. Also, we need to remember that we had a series of parliamentary coups, and first the coup in Honduras, then a parliamentary coup in Paraguay. Then we had the parliamentary coup against President Dilma in 2016 in Brazil. And that's how we got Bolsonaro, because, you know, Brazil cannot be considered a democracy anymore. We had the parliamentary coup against President Dilma, and then in order to prevent former President Lula from running, right-wing forces in the country also articulated an accusation against him, and he is in jail, although there is no clear evidence against him, but he is in jail anyway. You know, the United Nations, several people have protested against this because it's clearly persecution, a political persecution against him. Because if he was able to run, he's still the most popular politician in the country, but he could not run for president. So what happened was there was this political vacuum created because of this situation, and that's how you got Bolsonaro. Also, then there was a huge campaign, a fake news campaign, and the Bolsonaro campaign, that they had ties with people like Steve Bannon, and you know, there was a lot of media manipulation in Brazil for years and years. You had the mainstream media attacking the Workers' Party and the left, and then you had the huge campaign of fake news on social media. So all of that created this context for Bolsonaro to win. And, of course, the U.S. and the Trump administration have an interest in that because they want to have a hard line against progressive forces in Latin America.
The Trump administration has found a new bedfellow, Brazil's new president, Bolsonaro, and the emerging bromance between the right-wing presidents of the Americas. So we have some of the largest countries in line with the friendly relationship that Trump has developed. So you have Duque in Colombia and Mauricio Macri of Argentina. I want to bring Kevin into the discussion and Roger Wareham. And I'm interested in how critical you think, or what you think about this movement in relationship to our duties and our responsibilities as anti-imperialists, anti-colonialists, to deal with what many people have been caught off guard here or don't understand, how fundamentally still we see our involvement in Latin America, and now first and foremost with the attack on Venezuela. Kevin?
The United States has had its eye on Latin America for quite some time. They took their attention off it in the early 2000s with the Iraq War and George W. Bush. But Obama has been working to end the leftward flow in Latin America, and now Trump is continuing it. And Venezuela is the key to protecting this move toward more people-oriented governments, and so that's why it's one of the targets. And while this has been happening, the U.S. has been really in an ongoing coup since the Chavez election. Regime change has been on the agenda. Economic warfare has been on the agenda. Working with the oligarchs to disrupt the economy from within has been on the agenda. Now we're seeing it with this very open coup. And I think no one denies now. Everyone recognizes this is a U.S. coup. Siguero featured on the New York Times op-ed page looking like a choir boy to fool the public, fool the United States into what's going on there. But this is a U.S. coup with the oligarchs. And the first acts of Guaido were to seek to privatize the oil industry, which would deny the people of Venezuela that money that's being used to lift up the poor. And second was to look for loans from the IMF, which would put Venezuela under the thumb of Western bankers. So this is what this is about. And, you know, the U.S. is allied with democracy-less government in Brazil, with Colombia, and this rightward tide is something the U.S. has been pushing to regain control of Latin America.
Roger Wareham?
I would agree with what's been said by both of the speakers. When we look at what's happening in Latin America now, we should understand that the U.S. interest is in the particular of Venezuela, oil and ideology. The oil is self-evident. Kevin just pointed out that, and Pence or Pompeo, one of them said the other day that they're, you know, that the United States can run the United States companies can run the oil more efficiently and produce it more efficiently than the Venezuelans can. So it's clear that one of the things in terms of, we understand in the beginning of the 21st century, as capitalism is going through its throes of an economy that it really cannot recover from, that it's going to try and monopolize all of the resources that it can. So you have the question of oil and coltan and different resources in Latin America. You also find the same thing in Africa, in terms of, in particular, Zimbabwe, as a push to effect regime change in a country which has taken a position that is opposed to that of the United States and Western countries, one in terms of return of its land to the indigenous people, and also sitting on a number of important minerals, so that it's not restricted to Latin America, but the focus is on that right now. So you have that, and then you have the question of ideology in terms of when the Trump administration talks about the troika of tyranny or whatever they call it, and they're talking about Cuba, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, they're focusing on the countries which are socialists or which aspire to socialism. So they have a double-edged reason in terms of the intervention. And then, of course, in the particular of Trump, it's also a distraction from the legal problems that are imminent that he's facing in the United States. So we have to look at all of that in terms of our analysis. I think it's important that we mobilize all the people that we can. And the mobilization has to require the type of political education that is going on right now in terms of this show, that we have to get people to understand why it's important for them to be involved in the struggle to stop U.S. intervention in Venezuela, why it affects them. Because people, you know, Amilcar Cabral, the leader of the liberation movement in Guinea-Bissau, wanted people not fight for abstract ideas, they fight for food, clothing, and shelter. So it's our responsibility to be able to translate our understanding of the ideas to their interests and to be able to mobilize them.
What we have seen is that Brazil, the coup against President Dilma had to do with oil, because Brazil has large offshore oil reserves. President Dilma guaranteed that Petrobras, the Brazilian oil company, would have priority in all the contracts for those reserves, which also means that the pace in which those reserves would be exploited would be slower. So there is a less risk of an environmental disaster. Now the oil reserves in Brazil are open to foreign corporations, and there is much less regulation, and the risk of environmental disaster in offshore oil exploitation is also very high. And at the same time, President Dilma has created a fund to invest in education. So all the royalties from the new oil reserves will be invested in education. So all of that was dismantled after the coup. Now we have very much less investments in social programs, in education, in healthcare. We have a situation where we had the unemployment rate in Brazil at that time was 4%, and now it's 15%. Wow. So we have an economic crisis that is not going to get better, and privatization and structural adjustment policies are only going to make the economic crisis even worse. First of all, it's about the U.S. getting control over natural resources in Latin America, mining resources, oil, also water and land is also a target. The Amazon is a target as well of multinational corporations. At the same time, they want to have economic control and have the IMF go back, as happened. We already saw that happening in Argentina. Also, people have to understand is that in the case of Venezuela, there is a high risk of civil war. So we can bring the type of very bloody, catastrophic war to the Americas. And I think people in this country need to understand, even if they don't understand the situation in Venezuela, even, you know, we know there is a huge amount of media manipulation about Venezuela, but even if it's difficult for people to understand, just, you know, the argument that bringing a war to the region, I think, needs to get people to mobilize against this U.S. intervention.
Kevin wrote a really important article. One of the things that he laid out, U.S.-led coup, which is unusually open and propagated by every single solitary media outlet. It is an absolute full.
I think one of the responsibilities of activists is to overcome the false media narrative and inform others and build a new political narrative that overcomes the mass media and the bipartisans in Washington, D.C. So the article you talked about was our weekly newsletter, and we wrote it in response, actually, to a Bernie Sanders comment on Venezuela. He put out a two-paragraph comment. The first three sentences were all factually wrong, saying Venezuela is not a democracy, that socialism had run the economy into the ground, and that the Venezuela government was killing nonviolent protesters. Just false statement after false statement. He concluded with the right conclusion, that we should not intervene. But we used his comments as the outline for the first part of the article and reviewed the myths that were being told. So, but that's just, ours is just one of many. There's so many good articles out there now. I think our job is really to use our social media, our networks, the organizations we're involved in, our email lists, our Facebook, Twitter, to really overwhelm the false report. And I think we can do that. And so I think once we start to do that, the narrative will switch. Then our responsibility is to demand that any military action, because our previous comment was right, a war in Venezuela is a possibility, that any military action must go through Congress. And Congress under the Constitution is the part of government that has the power to declare war, and they need congressional authorization to take that kind of military action. So we need to make this a public debate and change the narrative,
Kevin,
by using our
one of the things to help change the narrative. I just want to take us back to May 20th, 2018, when President Nicolas Maduro was reelected, and the response to the allegations of unfair elections. Now, you were actually there. So help us begin the process of debunking some of the mythology that is being put out.
Well, I was there for the election for a while before that, and I was impressed by the quality of their electoral system. I'm not alone in that. Jimmy Carter has said it's the best electoral system in the world. They do some things that no other country does, and certainly some things the U.S. doesn't do. For example, just from the foundational issue, in the United States, there is no constitutional right to vote. In Venezuela, there is. And that really changes everything. If you have a right to vote, all these shenanigans we see in U.S. elections, restricting voter registration, not providing enough election machines, long voting lines, that would not be allowed if it was actually our right to vote. In Venezuela, it is, and therefore, they have a very different approach right from the beginning. But the beginning is one part, but the end is what really got me the most impressed, was at the end of election day, they do something no other country does. They have a people's audit where they do a public recount of every precinct has to do a random selection of 52% of the machines and publicly check the ballot. They do both a paper ballot that's voter verified and put in the ballot box and a machine count. And they take the paper ballots and read them one by one, lift the ballot up, show it to everybody watching. All the political parties are there. It's videotaped. The public and media can watch. They read the ballots one by one, take a tally of all the votes by hand, compare that to the machine count to determine if the machine is working properly or not. That is pretty impressive. It's so hard to get an audit or a recount in the United States that we can learn a great deal from that. And the only allegation of why this was not a legitimate election is because 46% of the people turned out. Maduro won 67% of the vote. That's a low turnout for Venezuela. It's a little bit lower than the U.S., but not much. And the reason for a low turnout was because there was a boycott. The opposition knew they would lose the election. And under U.S. pressure, they were told not to vote. Maduro would have won with a full turnout as well, and the opposition knew that. So this is a legitimate democracy. He's a legitimate president. There's nothing in the Constitution Venezuela Constitution that allows this. That's a nonsensical argument we can go into if you have time. But this is a false coup president that must be rejected, and our job as activists is to make that clear.
And Raj Wareham, you, in your capacity with the International Association Against Torture, et cetera, helped author a letter. I want you to talk about the content of that letter.
We sent a letter to the UN Secretary General and a copy to the President of the General Assembly, which is Ecuador, of all countries at this time, challenging the UN Secretary General to take the lead in denouncing the U.S. intervention on the basis that, one, it violates the Charter of the United Nations, which prohibits intervention in the internal affairs of a sovereign state, which Venezuela is, and that the Secretary General needs to take whatever steps necessary to prevent that from happening, from continuing. And then it also refers to, in terms of international law, the International Court of Justice, which had a decision back in 1986 when the U.S. had interfered once again in Nicaragua. And in their decision, the International Court of Justice says that the principle of non-intervention involves the right of every sovereign state to conduct its affairs without outside interference. And then it also later talks about the Nicaragua decision had made it clear that the principle of non-intervention prohibits a state to intervene directly or indirectly with or without armed force in support of the internal opposition within the state, which is precisely what the United States is doing now. So we're asking people to sign on to that letter if they want. We can get them copies. If they email us at D12M, that's the letters D, the numbers 12M at AOL.com, we'll get you a copy of the letter. We're going to have it up on our website, which is D12M.com for people to sign on to of international law. And at the same time, in the letter, we refer to some of the different interventions that the United States has done in Nicaragua, the 2001 sabotage of the petroleum industry, the 2002 aborted coup d'etat against President Chavez, the 15-year campaign of Minda Kevin and popular resistance, the newsletter, and I think the thing they did around Facts People Need to Know is an excellent compendium of what's going on in Venezuela. But the 15-year campaign to engineer commodity shortages in Venezuela, the 2014 La Salida exit campaign of organized violent street protests, President Obama's official declaration of Venezuela as a threat to U.S. national security, the 2015 Operation Jericho attempted a violent military coup against President Maduro. That's what the letter talks about. It puts it in the context of all the different violations and interventions by the U.S. So we can make it very clear who is the criminal in this scenario. It is not President Maduro. It is not the government of Venezuela. It certainly is the U.S. and its allies.
But I just want to go back for a moment to Brazil, and I'm thinking about what's happening in the Brazilian Amazon. Companies like Archer Daniels Midland and Bungie, which are American-based companies, the agribusiness, in particular the soy and beef production, which is a leading driver of forest loss and human rights abuses in the Brazilian Amazon. I wonder if you can talk about that, companies like, for that matter, BlackRock and State Street and Vanguard, how that draws Bolsonaro and his ideology towards the U.S.
In Brazil, you have a caucus in Congress that is very powerful, that is formed by rural elite, old oligarchs, that, you know, Brazil is the country that has the greatest concentration of farmland in the world. We never had an agrarian reform, and of course, you know, we have very, very strong movements like the landless workers movement in Brazil that has been struggling for agrarian reform for years. The most problems, urban and rural problems of poverty, inequality, hunger in Brazil are a result of land inequality. So we have dozens of people who are killed every year in land conflicts, you know, peasants, indigenous people that have been killed by these rural militia groups. Those are very powerful forces in Congress, and the local elites have very strong ties with multinational agribusiness corporations like Bunge, Cargill, and ADM, and Monsanto. And now, after the election of Bolsonaro, he's saying that he's going to open up millions of hectares of land in the Amazon to expand soybean production. A huge amount of environmental devastation in Brazil. It displaces rural communities. It destroys the land, the soil, the water sources, but also creates debt because agribusiness in Brazil receives a great deal of state subsidies. So what they produce is actually debt. When you do the counting, they claim that they contribute to the GDP, to the gross domestic product. But when you compare the amount of subsidies and unpaid debt, you see that what they leave is, a financial crisis and environmental destruction. So this is the result of expanding agribusiness.
I want to give a final comment to Kevin Zeese and also to then Roger to take us to, I know, which is we've got to be in the street. Kevin and then Roger, we've...
Well, yes, I think in the streets is important, and it's already happening. And the people of Venezuela are noticing our solidarity with them in the streets. We have a slider on the top of popularresistance.org that we will continually update with links to more protests that people can get involved with. This is going to be an ongoing process. I just want people to know that we can stop a military intervention, that we are on the right side of this issue and on the right side of history. I think the points about international law are right on. I'd be happy to sign that letter, by the way. I think that we need to bring it to that level as well, because already the OAS, which is under the thumb of the United States, has refused to recognize this fake president and refused intervention into Venezuela. And so I think we are going to win this battle, but we need to be organized, educated, organized, and mobilized. So please stay on top of that. Check out our slider on popular resistance at the top of the page to get involved. Thanks for having this show.
Thank you. Roger Wareham, Secretary General of the International Association Against Torture, member of the December 12th movement. Where do we go? How do we translate this into activism?
A demonstration to voice our outrage with the conduct of the country that supposedly, ostensibly represents our interests, which we know is not true. For more information, your listening audience can call 718-398-1766, 718-398-1766. This is really important that we take a stand, that we let the world know that what Trump's foreign policy is not the foreign policy of the people of the United States.
Roger Wareham, Secretary General of the International Association Against Torture, member of the December 12th meeting, Kevin Zeese, lawyer, political activist, co-director of Popular Resistance, Maria Luisa Mendonca, director of the Network for Social Justice and Human Rights in Brazil, looking deeper at our work as anti-colonialists, anti-imperialists, and clearly we've got to kind of sharpen our tools on that, get into the streets, sign the letters, do what we have to. Thank you all for joining us. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.